Hi, I'm Zahava Stadler. I am the project director of the Education Funding Equity Initiative at New America, which means I'm the K-12 school finance person at New America, which is a think tank based in Washington, D.C. Well, I think a lot of people have a basic understanding that property taxes play some role in how schools in the United States are funded. They pay their property tax bill. They might see it listed on their bill as a school tax. So people know there's some kind of connection there. But over the course of the 90s, 2000s, in nearly every state, there's been a shift to incorporate more and more state money into school operations funding. I'm saying school operations funding, which is a little bit of a term of art, but what that really means is things related to the goings on in a school, paying the teachers, buying the textbooks, getting the technology up and running, usually curricular materials, teacher training, all of that stuff, the things that you think of as what happens during a school day and who's doing it. That's the operations, and that's the portion of the school budget that has become more and more funded by state money. And, you know, the proportions between local property taxes and state money really vary depending on where you are, lots of other factors. But over the course of the last 3 to 4 decades, there's been a shift in that direction for school operations funding, in large part because it makes things fairer and more reliable, a little less tethered to differences in local wealth. And in a lot of states, that shift was pushed by court decisions that were arguing that the inequalities and the unreliability were a big problem and a problem for kids, a problem for kids' access to education, a problem for their constitutional right to an education. So that shift has been happening for school operations funding. It has not been happening for school facilities funding on the whole. When we say facilities, we mean the money that you spend on building a new building, maintaining a school building, upgrading it, making sure that the lights can turn on and the internet is connected and the air flows through the vents and that things aren't crumbling and that there isn't asbestos falling from the ceiling and that there isn't lead in the water fountain. All of that is school facilities funding, and that has remained very much funded at the local level. So there's been a divergence over the last few decades between how we finance school operations and how we finance school facilities. Local in school finance is a really loaded word. Local means something very specific. It means the area outlined by a particular boundary, the school district border. People are used to thinking about the border around the school district as defining, this is the area where this group of kids goes to this set of school, and it's governed by this school board, and that's where we vote for school board members. People think of it as defining who and where, but it also defines how much local money is available, because that same border outlines the property taxing jurisdiction that supports those schools. So if you're going to fund school facilities based on local property taxes or based on local bonds that the school district is able to issue, the wealth of that community matters hugely for how much money can be raised for that purpose. And so it becomes a reflection of the inequality in the state when you look at how much money different school districts are able to raise for their facilities. It's an echo of ground level differences in what communities have access to for every other purpose too. And so that means that higher poverty communities are more likely to have low value homes, low value properties, less access to lending and bond revenue, that those higher poverty communities are more likely to end up with older school facilities or insufficient school facilities that they're not able to build or improve to the degree that they need. And there is not just a poverty tie here, but also a racial tie, right? Because America has this really long history of discrimination in housing policy, going through sort of a history of everything from redlining to racially restrictive covenants to the government actively requiring and building segregated housing developments after World War II. There's a whole litany that we could have a whole podcast series on America's 20th century history of racially discriminatory housing policy. But the long and short of it is, we're still dealing with that legacy, and that communities of color have not had the same opportunity to build wealth in their homes, to build up property value that white communities have. That shows up in what they can raise for their schools. And the more locally financed something is, 80% local for school finance in facilities, the more local something is, the more those ground level injustices will show up in schools. over the course of the last 40 years or so, often driven by court decisions, states have taken on more of the responsibility for funding school operations, in part because when that was left to local jurisdictions that had really unequal abilities to fund their schools, kids didn't all get fair and equal and robust opportunities to learn. And because that money was really unreliable. And while that's still true to an extent, it's less true than it used to be because states have stepped up to take on more of the burden of funding school operations. And they haven't done that in the realm of capital facilities. You know what else hasn't happened in the realm of capital facilities? Lawsuits pointing out how unequal these things are on the whole. Now, there is actually a brand new current lawsuit that was just filed in California by the public interest organization Public Advocate, I think drawing on the exact inequality in California that the state's funding grants, the modernization funding that the state gave to school districts, actually sent more money to wealthy districts because of the match structure, right? And so there are now plaintiffs from school districts where those facilities improvements just aren't happening, saying, this is not fair. This is not equal. This does not meet the state's constitutional burden to support students well and fairly. And so the role of the courts here, I think, is underdeveloped. It's just at the beginning. And I really look forward to seeing the outcome of this lawsuit in California. But I also hope that this starts a little bit of a domino effect where we see advocates in other states take up this issue and try to run it through the courts, because that's been so instrumental in making funding more fair and more robust in the school operations space. I'd love to see it happen in facilities as well.